On this episode of the Legends of Tomorrow After Show, we're breaking down Season 3, Episode 17, guest starring John Noble. I will do anything for love, as Meatloaf said, but I won't trap Grodd. Let's do that.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin. Obama.
That's right, the sexy stylings of an artist I don't know, bringing us into this episode of Legends of Tomorrow. Look at that, ladies and gentlemen, you've got two hunks and a piece of junk breaking down this season, airing every Monday night on the CW.
Boys only tonight.
That's right.
Boys only.
I am the lesser of these three hosts, Frank Moran.
I'm Dave Child. Hi.
Hi. Hi. I'm Lex Michael.
And, of course, our fourth member of the group, Lucretia Lyon. She is on assignment this evening, so she won't be with us. But in spirit, you know that she's getting ready. She's probably at various liquor stores buying up the copious amounts of booze that she'll be storing up for season four of Legends of Tomorrow, which we'll get to at the end of the episode.
Ooh.
But in the meantime, folks, like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Feel free to hop in the chat.
Anytime.
Talk about,
Anthony, can you get the chat up?
Yeah, talk about Legends of Tomorrow in general, or this episode in particular.
Yeah, we don't have our resident oracle here, so Anthony's going to help us with the chat, but we'll see you, and we'll talk to you. If you say nice things about us.
Even if you don't say nice things, we might still talk to you.
Well, we might not mention those things. But you can say them on the chat. Feel free.
If it's really nicely worded, I will accept it.
Oh, all right. There you go.
So it could be a horrible criticism.
Yeah, as long as it's very thoughtfully phrased.
If it's put in a haiku, then we'll definitely say it.
I feel like we have to if they haiku it.
Yeah, yeah. Any negative criticism has to be presented in a haiku.
But if you try to haiku it and you write like an improper haiku, you get banned.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I just noticed here is just like the various stages of beardness on this panel. So you have the crappiness, the beginnings.
You need to have more confidence in yourself. No,
for real.
Yeah, it's just on the verge of blossoming into something beautiful, and then the end game right there. With
really?
Like,
wait, you think Dave is further along in the
progression? No, I feel like I'm being beard shamed.
You're not being beard shamed. Yours is about to blossom.
No, this is just what the beard looks like.
No.
This is what I can do with the beard. Guys, you are missing out if you're listening to this on a podcast.
Yes, if you
look
at the
YouTube. This is it.
But before we dive into the episode in specifics, though, what everybody think generally?
I liked it. I thought, especially after last week's episode, which you weren't here for when we talked.
I was not here for when you talked.
I wasn't a big fan of last week's.
No, real quick, like in brief, what was it about last week's?
I felt like it was a filler episode, except for all the Ava stuff, which was great, but I wish we had that with more in it.
Right.
Everything else was kind of just treading water until this episode.
Now it runs together for me past a certain point. When they killed Kwasa, was that last week or the week before?
That was last week.
So that happened.
It felt like the stories weren't really, they didn't make sense together.
Right.
And in this one, you had a similar issue kind of happening. There was a lot of stuff going on, but I enjoyed all the stories more. It didn't feel like there was any B or C story that was just there just to be there, just to figure out what a couple of characters were going to do. There wasn't that, like, teaching how to use the totem.
Oh, thank goodness.
Storyline, which was nice.
Yeah. I guess to piggyback on what you're saying, I agree. It all felt a good deal more balanced to me, both in terms of how much time we were giving to each individual thread, but also tonally, like, and everything felt like of such a sensibility, and also everything felt so much like only this show could do every single thing that this episode did, which I thought was really cool. And like kept moments that kept getting me like this rush of emotion and excitement as I was laughing out loud the way that things would twist, would turn, and shrinking gorillas also.
And yeah, like the Queen of Regal says in our chat, Grodd in a jar was probably enough to kind of keep this going.
And speaking of talking about balancing these individual threads, I am a bit relieved that the young Barack Obama storyline wasn't the entire episode.
No.
I feel
this
like...
this was the exact amount of that story
yes.
I needed.
Yes, I felt like it was perfectly deployed, and I feel like maybe in seasons past, like season one, I feel like maybe would have tried to stretch this into an entire episode.
Yeah, it would have been a whole... You would have met, like, young Joe Biden. You would have met, like... You know, it would have kept him and Michelle from meeting each other.
Right,
and
it would have
been, like... a whole thing, but this was just a nice little moment. We got to have Sarah be like, I miss you.
Right.
Which was also nice.
And we get, and also again, like jokes that only this show can make, right? Like confusing this Barry with their friend Barry. The
run
Barry
so
run line.
Dumb.
Was so dumb. Was so dumb, but so hyper specific to
this
show.
Yeah, that's very true. I just feel like it Rip saying Barry's in trouble, and they're like, not that Barry.
It better or worse than
Rip would not say Barry is in trouble when talking about Barack Obama.
Yes, it makes no sense, but it's great because it's so specific. But also, is that better or worse than Ray saying run, Barry, run?
No, run, Barry, run is fine.
That's
a nice little like, oh, that's funny. Their names are both Barry.
Right.
But the like, Barry's in trouble. That's like, he knew what he was doing. He was setting it up. So it's just like, I'm just tricking with you guys. It's the president. It's the former president.
I mean, as we were talking about last week, just for the teaser, and I was like, I don't know if I really like the idea of having Barack in there.
Yeah.
Just because it felt too recent in terms of having a president in there. But given that what we saw in the context of this episode, I feel like that's probably the appropriate president to have, because they have the conversation that you're having about that Sarah has with them.
Yes.
I feel like you needed a president that could also just... you know, has grown up on pop culture and has ingested it and is not going to be like, what? You're from the future?
Wait, right. You're gay? That would be a whole thing, too. And you got to have Obama actually be like, all right, okay. And a good Obama impression. The guy who played Obama was like spot on.
Yeah.
That was pretty great. The one groaner that I have to mention of the Barack Obama storyline was Make America Grot Again. That was too much for me, especially since it wasn't really an Obama joke.
Yeah.
It's a Trump joke that they're doing over Obama, but it doesn't really make sense. The birth certificate joke, though, that was perfect.
Yes.
That was a nice little nod at Obama. But
what also, like, on a meta level, the joke doesn't totally make sense. But in context, what does Grodd mean by that? That doesn't really mean
make
much.
Make America Grodd again?
Right. Was America Grodd before? I like the idea of Grodd.
That's true. I
like the idea of Grodd on his way over there trying to come up with a really cool line that he can throw at Obama when he thinks he's about to win, and that's the best he can come up with because he's not up on American politics.
Yeah, he's like, that starts with a G. That works.
I don't quite understand, because we get the tease where Barack Obama's in his dorm room, and then Grodd busts through the door. I do not understand what we cut to later. He's managed to get his way around this huge gorilla that is standing in front of the doorway and made his way out onto the campus running like, how the hell did he get away?
Hey, that's just a whole nother storyline. That could have been the rest of the episode, was him just escaping his room and just getting out of there. He had the moves.
That's right, yep.
I think they basically had, like, whenever they have Grodd, they're just like, we have to get to an open space immediately.
Yeah.
A big open space.
He does say it's almost an honor to kill you.
Yeah, that was... That was nice.
Yeah,
it was nice that Grodd was like, you know what? I miss you too. Yeah, you were a pretty good president. It's just like, anyways.
Here we go.
Time to kill you with my gorilla strength.
Yeah, again, one of those, I guess because you're drawing out suspense, but it still felt like he held him up way too long for up there. I'm like, isn't that just like a snap and you're done?
Yeah, but Grodd is one to kind of...
Milk it.
Right. Grodd is like a bad guy that I understand milking it and stuff. And speaking of bad guys, I also think of this episode, Dark, his kind of transitioned into kind of good and helping them out felt a lot easier in this episode than last episode.
Yes.
It was like kind of came out of nowhere last one. This one was like...
Yeah, and because that's what I want to talk about is this last episode. I mean, certainly these last few episodes, ever since, I guess the last maybe a little bit before that, but Dark's concern for Nora and what this whole thing is doing for him. And it felt like last week we discussed that it felt kind of unearned Given how little we've seen of the Darks.
Yeah, I felt like this episode you actually saw the stakes, what the stakes were.
Yeah.
And in the last episode, it kind of felt like, oh, I don't know about this. And it's, all of a sudden, he was shifting sides, and it didn't quite make sense. And if they had put, we were talking last week about how if he had put him in a room even with Rey, it would have felt a little better, because Rey was at least had that back and forth way back in time.
Right.
So it kind of, but this was nice. I kind of like what they were doing with Dark this time, and I kind of believed it more.
Yeah, it feels a good deal more grounded, good deal more organic, so much so that for me, by the end of the episode especially, I was feeling what he was feeling, and that doesn't tend to happen very often for me with that character. And yeah, like last week, I was aware that this connection was there. We were told more than we got to really experience it. And yeah, I felt like this week they really built upon the base that they had put in place last week in a way that felt very, very satisfying and very, very real. And yeah, a good deal more earned.
Yeah.
So basically when good old Damien Dark realizes that, oh my gosh, my daughter is going to be destroyed by the coming of Malice. I need some help. I don't want this happening. So he goes to the Legends. And then how do you convince the people, especially led by the person that hates you probably most in the world for what you've done to her and her sister? Yeah. How do you convince them, like, hey, we should partner up for this. We should be, you know, we should do it. Do you feel like it was a good character arc for Sarah to go from, like, I want to kill you to at least I will reluctantly work with you?
Yeah, I think so. I actually think they at least acknowledged that. It would have been not very great if Sarah was just like, oh, okay, have you joined the team? There's at least a moment where she was very defensive about him joining, and also openly talking about it. I just want you dead. I want to kill you. I feel like the only thing you should do is be dead. And I also like the fact that she brought up, you know, him being alive is a discrepancy in the timeline itself. So we maybe should kill him if we want to keep the timeline together. And I thought that was a good reasoning and a good excuse for what she kind of wanted to do. And they talked out of it in a good way.
Well, and I think it's a good benchmark. It marks her growth, right? Because a couple of years ago, I don't think Sarah would have been willing to even have that dialogue. I think it would have been like, you have to physically restrain me or I'm going to kill this dude.
Yeah.
So I like it. I like it in that sense as well. And honestly, putting the two of them in a room together, the tension between the two of them and the way they interact and the way they circle each other in a scene like tigers is endlessly compelling. So yeah, just contrive a way, like find more scenarios in which the two of them can do that, whether they make sense or not.
What I do like in those scenes, though, is the way Mick is just like, when Sarah gives the kill order, he's just ready to go. No hesitation. And it's like, if she says stop, I'll stop. But otherwise, I'm ready to fry this guy right in here now.
I also like how he still uses his gun, even though he has the power to have flames come out of his hands. He still loves his gun. So he's going to stick to his gun.
An old trusty gun, absolutely.
It's trusted.
What I liked, though, is when Sarah comes around and says, all right, we're going to work with Damien to do this, and says, I will do this, but after we're done saving your daughter, I'm going to put you in the ground. And I liked how fast Dark just said, deal.
Deal.
There wasn't even like a second's hesitation or kind of like a quippy remark to kind of come back at her. No.
Right.
Just do it.
I also like how Dark was very apologized for killing her sister and just talking about, like, listen, I thought that wasn't the end-all be-all. I thought that was it, and I thought I needed to do that. And that was a nice, not quite redeeming moment, but I believed him but was also suspicious of him at the same time during that moment. And I thought he handled that really well.
Yeah, because those are moments that I always find interesting when that villain that you've seen do such horrible things has that moment of trying to at least reach out to the person that they've harmed most and apologize, just to see if they're, you know, how that person that's been harmed or injured takes it.
Right.
Do they at least try to offer some solace to them, or do they just shut it down? No, you're evil. You're always going to be evil. Doesn't matter if you have some kind of conscience right now. I'm going to end you. And it feels like Sarah leans more towards that.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think the door's open a little bit because we've explored her assassin past. So we know that she's killed people. So, but this is her sister, so she doesn't have to and shouldn't forgive him for killing her sister. But I think it's there. I think there's like a little bit of a open door in that sense.
And this is just me spitballing. And I don't think we have anything to base it on, but the fact that Dark goes through this kind of epiphany that he has, but now that he's has a daughter and is on the verge of losing her, knows what it's like to lose something that you love, would he have some way to kind of kind of make reparations towards Sarah, use his stones to go back and alter Laurel's fate?
Maybe.
Or that just seems too...
I don't think they would do that. I don't see him making that big a leap. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like what this buys them is, okay, I won't try to kill you all this week. I'll give you, like, two weeks. I'm going to go, I'm going to spend some daddy-daughter time, and then I'll come back and try and kill you 2 weeks from now, and it'll be like it was, and we'll all be happy. I don't see them really ever going further than that, because I feel like what's Damian Dark going to do if he's not trying to remake the world in his image? You know what I mean? He's not going to go, like, work at a Baskin-Robbins, for example. So I feel like he's always going to be himself, right? Like, even if he becomes a general forester, if not good, then neutrality for a minute, eventually he's going to be like, yeah, but... the world is not enough in my image, so I'm going to get back on that, right. If that's cool.
So that whole dealing, you know, making a bargain with a demon didn't work, but let's see what happens when with mutants or something.
And to, like, yes, it's what he's doing, he's making decisions now very clearly out of what is obviously a genuine, deep love for his daughter. But you could argue that is still, he can't separate that from himself and his own narcissism and his own need and his own want. So... who's to say that even though, yes, he completely understands and he can communicate that in this moment, who's to say that once he knows his daughter is safe, that would really make much of a difference in how he approaches anything? Right. Maybe it would, but I don't know.
There was an interesting moment in this episode that I could... I think at first I was like, oh, why didn't they see that coming? Was when Dark turned on them, obviously, after he got the Death Stone, and then he turned on them, and I was like, oh, we should have all seen that coming. But there was a moment... when I realized, oh, of course he did that, because he just wants his daughter alive. And the plan shifted to, let's bring the demon out and then defeat the demon. But that doesn't mean his daughter's going to stay alive. If the demon is, you know, comes out, supposedly, for all he knows, that means she's dead. So that's why he went up against them at that moment. And I thought that was a good reason for him to turn on them rather than just be like, now time to be evil Dark again.
Right.
It just was like, oh, the plan has shifted? Well, I can't go with that plan.
Right.
So that's why I can't, like, come with you. And I could also see them kind of having that blind spot of being like, oh, yeah, he's not really into defeating the demon. He's just into saving his daughter.
Right.
But
no, I was trying to figure out how I felt about his reversal. Yeah. Or I guess a double reversal, I suppose.
Double, triple, axle reversal.
That's right. Judges, how did he do? That's
10.
Because I felt like we get that one little beat there in the Wave Rider where after he's on board with everything and they've given him the death totem that he sees...
I like that quickly giving him the death totem, too.
Yeah,
I
no
thought
hesitation.
That was a nice moment where it's like, and no, he's going to have the death totem.
That we see a ghost image of Nora. Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, it must mean you're dead. He says, no, not yet. I'm fighting. But I'm losing, and I don't want this to happen. I really regret what I've done. And that, I mean, I guess that was enough.
That made me think he was gonna fight with them. That made me think he wasn't going to reverse the tide. So I was a little, I wouldn't say surprised when he did turn on them, but I was like, oh, I didn't expect it happening at this moment, but it makes sense.
Because I was trying to figure out, like, his other option is, like, to keep Malice contained with Nora, hope that they could all get those six talismans working, and then defeat him somehow?
Defeat him, and then somehow Nora's okay.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm kind of sure what's going to end up happening. But for all we know, Nora's now gone and dead.
It didn't look like there was much of a body left when the most like metal looking demon in the world emerged at the end of this episode.
The like bat out of hell meatloaf demon comes out. But which, by the way, I love the fact that he's just an old school demon.
Yes, with the wings and the horns and all of it. Yes.
Are you happy with this final look? Because at the beginning of the season, he says you couldn't comprehend. My image.
No,
you can't handle
really,
how
like,
metal I am.
I mean, really, if you've seen any heavy metal magazine, you can comprehend my image. Yeah, I was kind of expecting him to be a bit more Cthulhu-y, to be a bit more like elder gods, like some tentacles and dark mist and stuff. And instead, it was just like horns and wings and. But I don't mind that. I just like that he was like. Not a guy in red face paint. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just appreciated that he was an actual demon monster. He could have been a bit more of a of a better design, but he was still.
It feels still somehow nice. Tonally correct for this show, though, yeah. That it's like a metal demon.
Yeah.
Well, we've learned what a incomprehensible demon will look like when he's brought onto our plane.
Speaking of metal demons,
that's right. So we learned that, but you know what? If you folks want to learn and have fun and grow in all areas of your life, you know what? We've got a podcast just for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition, created by our AfterBuzz TV founder, drops in iTunes every single Friday. Conversations with Maria Menounos feature celebrity and influencer interviews along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life. From health and wellness, career and relationships, finances and more, why not let our Maria be the big sister you never had? So just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. And when you do, let her know that it was the Outcasts and Misfits from the Legends of Tomorrow After Show that got you there. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition. Check it out.
Legends.
So we also, last week, we found out what Ava's secret, or at least the majority of what happened, her secret is. And this week, Sarah's really pushing. And she's a clone from 20...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, Ava's secret. Yeah.
Yes. And so Sarah's really pushing to, now that Rip's here.
Uh-huh.
Talk to Rip.
This is actually interesting that you put it that way, because I felt like they weren't pushing it enough. It felt like they were like, oh, Rip's here. This is going to be awkward. Let's just not talk about it. Let's just not talk about it. I feel like Rip shows up. I feel like he calls about, is like, okay, cool, Obama Grodd. Why did you take Ava as a clone from this century and bring him back? But at the same time, when he eventually did start talking about it, it surprised me, because I like the fact that she's not special. I expected it to be she was the one clone that wanted to be a real human and showed affection, and that's what he saw, and so chose her. But she's the 12th. She's the 12th Ava, which is, it kind of, Rip's a bad dude.
He's not nice. He's like, and we really, like, we don't, that's the one element of this that really is bugging me now, is that we keep letting Rip off the hook every time he does an arguably horrifically morally reprehensible thing and keeps it secret from everybody. This is at least once a year he pulls this shit, and we keep giving him a pass. I feel like at a certain point we got to have like a bullshit intervention with Rip Hunter.
Well, I'm curious, because he said the reason that it was great is that he found a timeline where he had kind of a constantly renewable resource for time agents. And what I do think is, why weren't they all Avas? Because we see a lot of people that aren't Avas for...
Well, he wanted someone in charge of the Time Bureau who he could trust and work efficiently and be hard. If he filled the Time Bureau with Avas, yeah, that might have been less evil. It might have actually been kind of a nice way to like put all these clones to use. But I think instead he wanted to have... a head of a snake that can't be cut off, because he could always just keep replacing.
And I assume he must have some sort of memory implant that he can just dump everything that she's experienced so far.
I assume so too. But this was like a Rick and Morty thing to do, and not a Legends of Tomorrow thing.
It gets darker the longer I think about it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like he's let all these Avas die, and now there's this one Ava who's actually fallen in love with Sarah, and is now this Ava is special because of the love, which is making their shipping kind of even harder. They're doing a good job with this relationship, making this relationship strong. Although I did forget that they had broken up. So when they kissed, did you have this moment when they kissed and was like, "What are you doing?" I was just like, "Oh yeah, I guess they were broken up last episode," but I felt like they got back together last episode. So it wasn't.
Yeah, it did kind of seem like it, but I guess we never had the official, like, we're back?
I guess it was never officially, like, a kiss.
Well, but I also liked, too, I liked the moment where Sarah tells Ava that she loves her, right? Because that, too, is something that I don't think Sarah, even a year ago, would have been capable of opening herself up to. I thought that was nice. That actually, like, it got me a little bit, especially because you know that 50-50 at best, this relationship survives the next episode, even. So, like, knowing that there's a very real chance that they're doomed in one form or another, that moment got me.
Yeah. I think they're going to survive.
I hope so. They're nice.
I think also we're not quite done exploring Ava. Oh, that sounded...
All right.
That sounded a bit
okay.
Saucy. The perfect woman. But I feel like she has a lot more psychological growth we can, like, explore. Like, she's... Now she knows she's a clone, but now she's going to be different than other people. She knows she can be replaced, but she's still an individual person. I want to spend more time with her now that I know this fact than I did before. So I think this adds to her character.
Dave's going to be tweeting at you, Ava.
That's right. What's up, girl? I'll be your Gary.
Because we have that one scene where, of course, Ava and Sarah, they talk about, why aren't you talking to Rip about this? And she says, I'm compartmentalizing everything right now. I'm focusing on the task at hand, which is the mission.
Yeah.
I'm going to worry about this later. But then Rip comes in and says, you really should talk to Rip right now. And those things always kind of frustrate me when two people know it and the third person that they're talking about comes in the room, that one person will always excuse himself and like, I'll leave it to you two to talk. Like, why doesn't the third person just like open up the can of worms for like, Rip, why did you do this?
Yeah, you can multitask. You know, it can be like, this is terrible. Okay, I'll get the Time Bureau. By the way, why am I a clone from the future?
Yeah.
Just tell me right now because I got to head out the door, but you got to the elevator pitch me. quickly in two sentences, why did you do this?
If you were Sarah in that scene, mm-hmm. would you write it to be such a way that you would just encourage Ava to talk and then leave? Or would you want to write it the way where Sarah stays in there and just kind of forces everything to come out much more quicker than it does?
No, I actually think from Sarah's perspective, it makes more sense. From Ava's perspective, I don't think so. But from Sarah's perspective, to be like, you got to talk to him. You got to do this. And then it's not really her place to kind of bring it all out at once. I think when she says no, then she's like, okay. But then when she leaves, she's like, okay, now I really have to know. I really have to talk about it. So it kind of made sense for her.
Yeah. Although, for me, the flip side of that is by staying in the room and forcing Rip to talk, like, I feel like she could she could viably make the argument that, all right, dude, this is the umpteenth morally reprehensible series of lies in God knows how long on my ship.
Yeah.
Talk. Talk or like, get off the ship. Or we'll put you in the little secret, like, porn dungeon you have downstairs.
Then
and we'll lock
gonna
you
work.
In there.
He's going to have a code.
That's true, yeah.
No, he changed all the codes. But he's got secret Gideon codes.
He does.
He's got secret
he's
Gideon
always
codes.
Got secret Gideon codes.
You can't
the whole
ever
ship,
lock him up in the
whole ship
rider.
Will be a porn dungeon.
I feel like Rip must have realized at some point where he kind of tallied every crappy thing that he'd done in his life. Is that all right, Gideon? I need to make codes for every single one of these crap things I've done just to give myself an edge when it gets finally discovered.
As a writer, that's got to be a great well that you keep going back to. All right, Rip's got a new code. Rip's there. Speaking of wells and writers, one thing that I like is Lord of the Rings keeps popping up.
Yes.
And we've got to talk about actually the whole point of the title. Which I love that that's what they chose to call this episode,
yep.
was guest starring John Noble, rather than anything The Trouble with Barry or, you know, the President of the Gorilla. There's so many choices that they could have done.
Now, I mean, I've seen the Lord of the Rings films, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So I did not even remember that John Noble was even in it.
I forgot that, too. But I know Keto... remembers because Keto's obsessed with Lord of the Rings, which is why there was a J.R.O. Tolkien episode, and she's one of the writers on this show. And so it was nice to be like, Lord of the Rings comes back. Keto writes this show. And I thought that was a funny way. I actually thought it was a real funny way to have him become a guest star and have a cameo is to make it. They did the Ocean's 11 thing, which is, I hate in Ocean's 11. Is it 11 or 12?
12, when they had
and 12,
Julia,
when
yeah.
they're like, Julia Roberts looks just like Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
I hated that in that movie because that meant, okay, if Julia Roberts looks like Julia Roberts, George Clooney looks like George Clooney, Matt Damon looks like Matt Damon, we're going to go down this rabbit hole. But in this case, where it's John Noble, and they're watching it, and they realize just an actor has the same voice as a demon... Which I'm sure would happen, because there's a lot of like you could change a lot of actors' voices to make them demons. I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was a funny assumption, and I think it's even better than him playing the actual demon himself. Like his voice is there, but you still got to have that kind of Gideon cameo.
Yeah, I would agree.
By going specifically to the Lord of the Rings set.
No, I loved that. And again, too, right, it's ridiculous, it's absurd, and it's something that I feel only this show could do, right? Only this show has both the mechanics in place on a story and universe level and the sense of humor to do something this patently ridiculous. No, like, I really, really dug it.
But I do like that Ray, when he goes to the set, talks to him in his trailer, he just wants to make sure that he's completely, like, kiwied out. Like, I got to put on the cap for, like, a rugby team. Like, all right, yep, I'm genuine. I'm a New Zealander. You can trust me.
Yeah.
Say these. So the idea is that they're going to have John Noble record all the lines, that they want to have Malice say.
This plan, though, this is... it's been 3 years of questionable at best plans from these people. This is maybe one of the most foolish plans that they have ever concocted.
Well, you know, I think if you start to hear a voice that sounds exactly like Mollus's,
right,
in your ear, you're possessed by this demon anyways, you're gonna assume it's the demon talking.
You might.
Plus, it's loud in your ears.
You might. I guess, right? Like, you're hinging the entire thing really hard on the idea that she's not gonna be able to tell the difference.
I would also question, like, why is Mollus only on my left side?
Right.
Yes, it's true.
It's not stereo there.
Yeah. It just seems like a plan that, like, you give a group of kindergartners or first graders. Like, how could we trick somebody? Oh, they could get really small and crawl on his ear and then talk and then be like, oh, yeah. But have, like, Ray, like, as a physicist, you're like, you know what? This is a really just...
You know what? I'm glad they're using Ray shrinking things and shrinking himself, because sometimes I think they forget about that all the time. And that's a good way of getting rid of Grodd. Why didn't they keep an eye? They need a shelf. They need a good... I think that's what we've learned from this season, is they need a good closet spice rack for their amulets, for their boxes of amulets, for their gorillas and jars, for their rats. They just need, like, organization. They need to bring the Wave Rider to the container store.
I don't know why they kept Grodd in that jar the whole time. Why, if you get him back to the Wave Rider, put him in something sturdier.
Yeah.
Because I would think that he
also,
could just...
to be nitpicky and have a little bit of beef.
Ooh, all right.
I don't think shrinking Grodd would affect his ability to have psychic powers and telekinesis. I think he could have, unless they put some mumbo jumbo on that jar, that's the only thing I could think of to, like, all they needed to do was put, like, and here's the psychic chip on top of the jar, and now he can't, that blocks all of his psychic powers, but they don't have that. It's just a jar keeping him from controlling people.
I am assuming, and see if this logic tracks, that, so Damien Dark says, hey, I got to make sure the timeline resets itself, so I got to have the Zumbezi tribe die. And if it's not going to be by these warlords, then I'm going to use the only thing I have at my disposal, and that's a mini Grodd.
Yeah.
That he opens a jar, lets him out, but then finds Ray's shrink gun and enlarges him? Or does he do it through magic? Or how does Grodd get back to Grodd size?
Does that really matter?
It does. How does he do it?
Really? Is that like...
Because then if Damien Dark can counteract Ray's shrink ray, I mean, that's a useful thing to know.
That is actually for, okay, if when you frame it that way, then it actually makes it a more salient question, right? Because if his magic can counteract the shrinking effects, then why, every time that comes up now, why won't he do that?
I think he just stole the shrink ray and was just pressed reverse on it. I think it's not, I don't know.
I mean, ultimately, I think you're entirely correct that it's not ultra important.
I don't think it's
that
important. I think it's more of like, how exactly do these two pieces connect? But I think it's a pretty easy solve.
It's the most important piece of this episode.
Frank has weird beef.
That's it. That's my weird salient beef right there.
We do have to talk about Amaya's, that whole storyline.
Well, before we jump on that, I want to just ask about the... I love Neil McDonough, and I think he's great as Damien Dark, but I don't know what his choice of, like, the really bad overacting he did when Ray is in Nora's ear.
Oh, why, yeah.
I was just like, why? Can't you just at least pretend that it's, like, sell it a little bit better?
It doesn't make sense to me that Damien Dark wouldn't be able to lie better than that in that moment.
Maybe he's not able to lie to his daughter.
Oh, boy.
Because the power of love.
So, yes, as Dave mentioned, the whole reason that we end up back in Africa is because at the end of last episode, Amaya went back to 1992 to try to change her tribe's future.
Yeah.
In the sense, save Kuwasa as well.
Yes. And also, it would save herself, too, because she was supposed to die that attack. I found it a little weird, the makeup choice, old age makeup. But okay, all right, let's go with it. I kind of wish they just recast it as an older woman who looked a little like her. But okay, I went along with it.
Yeah,
my thing, I felt, again, one of those things where, like last week's episode, where we thought like too many storylines which could have maybe served their own episodes.
Yeah,
like this where we have Amaya talking to her daughter, the daughter doesn't realize it's her own mother talking to her because she's a young Amaya. But that flip from like, oh, you know, I don't want this pressure to like, okay, I'm gonna do it now. It just seemed very fast to me.
Yeah, I think that's true. I just kind of went with it. I did like the idea of having the actual town and the fate of the town be the one time apparition that they let happen eventually, and saving it is the time apparition that they let happen in order to let Mollus out, because that's how they could defeat him. I thought that was a good idea. I thought that was a good choice.
Yeah,
because it made it so, wow, you're able to save the actual like village, but still it served the purpose of the bigger plot.
True. I feel like because we've heard this event name-checked so many times since Amaya's been introduced that I guess to bring it together with something of this import kind of is cool to be able to see something. I guess it feels like if you're going to bring it into the show, it should be something this big.
Yeah.
But in a sense, too, I also feel like I wish we had a little bit more time just to focus on the essence of that storyline, which is Amaya trying to change her family's fate.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
But I was a fan of the shoving ground effect when Nate was using the totem. Whatever was going on there, more of that. Try it on different surfaces, see what they do. Try it on some metal next, see what happens. It's more of that. More shoving ground.
He's an earthbender. I also like the talk about like who gets what powers, and I also like how Rey does not know how to use that water.
No.
That water ability at all.
Well, it seems like from what Nora was describing when she's trying to activate the totem, it's got to be like a selfless act that kind of does it.
Yeah.
Or at least
what happens with the initial to get some of the totems. I don't know if that's the every single totem.
True. I mean, I guess because it seems like Nate's activated when he went out to go see after Maya got thrown out of the tent from Damien. That's when we first see it kind of activating.
And the death totem kind of chose Sarah.
True.
And called out to Sarah. So, and it apparently you need to kind of, it's like the Harry Potter carriage monster rule where you need to have died or have seen someone die.
So then we need to see Rey cry.
Trying to remember what those things are called.
That'll do
it. Can't remember. Can't remember what they're called. Thestrals? Thestrals.
Yeah, I think so.
Is that sounds right. That sounds pottery.
Yeah.
They're Gryffindors. Griffin Puffs.
Griffin Puffs. Great.
Griffin Puffs. Oh, now you're getting farther and farther away.
No. All right. So real quick, just a couple of news items here before we wrap up the show.
Yeah, we got news.
Yes.
R. AfterBuzz TV News.
Yeah. We're concerned about Ava and Sarah's relationship going into next season. Well, rest assured it will continue because good old Jeff McKellen has been up to a series regular for season 4.
Oh, that's good news.
And in fact, you're saying season 4. Yes, that is right. Season 4 has been officially announced for Legends of Tomorrow. Everything except iZombie in terms of their superhero shows have been renewed for a new season.
Oh, wait. Does iZombie got canceled?
Well, it hasn't been canceled yet, but they're going to make that decision in May because it just started airing.
I hope it stays. I like iZombie a lot.
But everything else, like across the board, all the DC CW shows are coming back. Black Lightning's getting a second season. Riverdale, I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's coming back. Supernatural.
Fourth and final season.
Supernatural will outlive all of us.
That's right.
Supernatural will never die.
Given CW expanded to 6 nights a week, I think they're probably going to wait and see how the pilots shake out before they give the green light to iZombie.
Right.
If they don't find anything they think it'd do better, then I feel like iZombie will be coming back.
Yeah, support iZombie. I like iZombie. It's a good show.
Do it. So yes, and you know that means John Constantine will be a full-fledged member of the Legends team next season.
Wouldn't you have been so mad if you were Matt Ryan and it was like, you're hired full-time, buddy, and then next week, we don't have a show anymore. Sorry, dude.
We tried.
But if we did, I think that's why they did it, so more people would be like, we really need a season 4 now.
That's true.
Yeah.
They did it just for Lucretia. We know that's a real reason.
She's not going to be sober for a year.
That's true. I see what you've done. Yeah.
But would she be anyways?
Touche.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode. episode of the Legends of Tomorrow After Show. We're getting ready for the next week's season finale.
Woo!
Holy cow. Who will live? Who will die? How will the universe be changed? What kind of cliffhanger will we leave off on?
I will die.
Oh, no, not.
No, Lex,
spoilers,
no.
Spoilers, you know, I will die.
You know, you can stop that, folks. You can like us on Facebook, but more importantly, give us 5 stars on iTunes. Pump this man up with 5-star reviews, and he will stay alive no matter what he tries to do next week.
Oh, wow. he can't even kill himself.
That's right. It took a darker turn than I intended. And thanks, everybody, for hopping in the chat. You know, you can subscribe to the YouTube channel and give it a thumbs up while you're there. But if you want to continue the conversation with any of us, send Lex Michael texts and Twitters of messages of love and hope.
Where can I find you?
I'm all over social media at the Lex Michael. I also do a podcast with Tari J. Miller. It's called Missing Out. It's essentially, we talk about art, we talk about media, we talk about experiences, how those things shape the people that we are and why they resonate with us the way we do. Dave's nodding because he's been there. He's done a show. You came on and you did. You talked about Wes Craven's New Nightmare with us back in October. New episodes drop every Tuesday and every Monday. We do little mini episodes, Missing Out Monday, where we talk about what we liked over the past week. It's great. It's the retrospective that's introspective. Come check it out on Twitter at Missing Out. But still laugh at me. Find it on Twitter at Missing Outcast and wherever podcasts can be located. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, all of the things. Come check it out. We love you, Ma.
I just love the very fast side effects include.
I snap back into pitch
mode.
That's
why you went right into it. You can find me at DaveChild.com or at MRDaveChild. This is my announcer voice, apparently. Also, I'll be on the Westworld panel coming up, I think, next week, I think. So join me there after all this Legends is done. But you can find me at all those places I just mentioned. Thank you. I love you. Bye.
All too. There you go. Folks, follow me on Twitter
Google
and Instagram.
Dave Child.
That's right. It's worth it. Trust me. I do it every night. Happy Go Jackie. I'm not doing this. I'm just sitting in a dark room. That's it. All right, folks.
Thanks for joining us. Join us next week. Finale with Lucretia.
On the Legend of the Tomorrow After Show right here on AfterBuzz TV. Speed off.
Swap off.
Swap.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Get the swamp.
Something about Obama and swamps.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals. After Buzz TV.